Welcome to the Body Meets Mind podcast, philosophies and strategies for an elevated life. I'm Tom.
And I'm Paulie. We interview world authorities and experts in health and wellness optimization, psychology and spirituality.
And we don't mind chewing the fat either, just the two of us.
If you feel like being part of a casual yarn about self-awareness and growth, pull up a chair because the coffee's still hot.
We'll see you on the inside.
Hello and welcome to the Body Meets Mind podcast. I am Paulie and this is Tom. Today we are talking about a very, very cool topic, which is that of resilience, something that our society in the modern world has really, stepped away from in recent decades. In fact, you know, obesity has actually tripled since 1975, I believe. And there are so many reasons for this, but I do feel that a very comfortable existence that we find ourselves in year after year, where things become automated, we find ourselves as humans drawing towards the path of least resistance because it just makes sense to do things easier. The issue I find with that is there are a whole bunch of health implications that come up as a result. What do you think about that, Tommy?
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting to me when you look at you know, socioeconomic trends and trying to find a causal factor for the reasons why things are the way they are. It's always tricky. I think especially when it comes to a conversation like resilience, I wonder sometimes, I'm biased because I work with a lot of young adults and adolescents in the clinic. And I often view myself, you know, older generations see that generation as, oh, they're on their phones all the time. They're all anxious and depressed. And, you know, and I wonder sometimes whether we might all be like that if we grew up when they grew up, you know, because, yes. I was born in 1993, so I was just on the cusp. I was quite lucky. You know, I was playing with Game Boys and stuff when I was a kid, but most of the time it was cubby houses, trees, you know, the ground is fire, you can't touch the ground, you know, slinkies. I was just on that cusp where you go out in the mornings and you come home for lunch or you come home for dinner. And I used to eat Fritz sandwiches with tomato sauce, but mum would make me at lunch. But it's hard. But look, I mean, you know, aside from all of that, we definitely need to be more resilient as human beings, for sure, in a world that is absolutely obsessed with, overconsumed by convenience, you know. You mentioned it before, you know, our biological nature is to walk the path of least resistance. You know, if I was a chimp back in the savannas and there was a banana tree and I was really hungry and it was 200 meters, or there was a banana tree and that was a kilometer away, I'd obviously go for the closest banana tree. And now we can press a button and we can have pizzas and ice creams and alcohol and everything at our front doorstep. So this is a very important topic.
Yeah, it sure is. And as you mentioned, you know, technology has allowed us to literally not leave our couch. We can go on existing for the rest of our lives without leaving our couch. And we can get anything we want as a result of that. In fact, our couches, in order to get up from the couch, we can buy a couch that actually lifts us up.
Yeah, that's right.
As opposed, and I've seen them being advertised on midday TV. They're a thing, and I bet you they sell like hotcakes because you've got people around there going, oh, shit, I don't even have to stand up from this couch.
Yeah, I've been sitting on this couch like an idiot.
Exactly. Getting up, wasting my hamstrings.
Unbelievable.
What's going on here?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, I must go to see my doctor about my knees.
Yes.
It's crazy, man. It's totally crazy. Amongst many other things. This is the first time in human civilization where we have to actively seek out discomfort to regulate our mental health. You know, it's a very bizarre time.
It's a prescription. And I think that's something that I wanted to discuss today. It's like, not very long ago, discomfort and challenge was built into our everyday life.
Yes.
We were confronted with it because if we weren't confronted with it, we would not survive.
Yep.
Now it is a it needs to be designed by humans. It needs to be prescribed by ourselves to be able to make our lives more challenging in order to be able to give to ourselves, to be able to give to our bodies and to give to our minds.
Yes. Mate, it's interesting that we talk about this. I'd love to speak on the neurochemistry because it's in the front of my, it's actually quite coincidental. I know you've just written a blog about it. I just finished reading a book all about dopamine by a psychiatrist. And she talks about kind of what happens, and we can break this down when we perceive a reward. So your dopamine is kind of a tonic baseline. So it's scientists and psychiatrists talk about homeostasis, so the balance of the neurochemistry. You might be bored or whatever it is, or you might see a stimulus, you might have a thought, and we can use food because it's such an easy example. The thought about eating a donut actually increases our dopamine levels. So the thought alone, not actually eating the dopamine, okay?
And it increases it more than the eating of it. Am I correct?
Absolutely. And the reason for that, so that's a great point. So the reason for that is because dopamine is our neurotransmitter that's responsible for excitation and motivation. People usually conflate it with satisfaction and happiness, and that's kind of not the case. So dopamine gets us to do shit, basically. Serotonin is what's secreted when we feel content. So it's the eating of the donut. So it's this temporary satiation. But it makes sense that both of those neurotransmitters start to decrease because we need to go out and get more of the thing that brings us joy. And usually the things that bring us joy fundamentally are the things that keep us alive. Yeah. So it's food, it's sex, and everything like that, you know? So you have this thought about the donut, you get an increase in your dopamine levels, followed by a near immediate plummeting of those dopamine levels, which is another way of saying a craving. So you have the thought, and then you immediately get this feeling that to me kind of shows you how far away you are from getting that thing. It's like, oh God, you know, it's all the way down there. I've got to go for a drive or whatever it is, you know? And, you know, you can start to see now how, damaging Uber Eats is because it's just bang, you know, get rid of that craving, get rid of that craving.
Yeah, yeah.
The craving is what gives us motivation to do something. So then I get off my ass to the degree that I want the donut. I get off my ass and I walk down and I go and get the donut and bang, now I've got some serotonin there. Okay. So it's go for it.
Let me ask you a question. I'm keen to hear this since it's very fresh in your mind. What happens when we breed a society in a world where we have those dopamine hits and we have access to them almost instantaneously, as opposed to working for the dopamine hit like we had to once upon a time?
Yeah. So it's a great question. And we kind of already know this intuitively, but the answer is that a dopamine hit without prior perceived effort absolutely makes us feel far worse than if it was the opposite. So if you can just get dopamine or feel good neurotransmitter into your brain without having done anything to earn it, you don't feel good. You don't feel fulfilled. You don't feel like your life is progressing everywhere, you know, and that's actually neuroscientifically true. It's not just a thing of, oh, I didn't earn it, so I feel shit about myself. It's and I try to say this to clients all the time. It's like, this isn't a, you know, let's say I'm working with someone called John. Like, this isn't a John problem. You know, this is a human thing. If I was you right now, given what you're going through, I'd be feeling the exact same way because I have the same chemical makeup as you do. You know, and so many young kids, man, it's insane. Like, I've got no motivation, you know, and it's like, hey, without this awareness and this real challenge to get away from all of these dopamine hits, I'd be feeling the exact same way you are. So I really feel kind of sympathetic for them. There's a lot of hope, but I feel the sympathy.
I get it because, you know, the marketers out there have realized that this is what gets dollars into their business, right? It's, there's nothing more powerful than getting this instantaneous, you know, dopamine hit. So if you actually, excuse me,
that wasn't a burp, just by the way.
So if you're continuously getting these, and you know, you're fighting a really uphill battle as well. If companies are putting probably in some instances hundreds of millions of dollars behind, you know, marketing these products to you, knowing that exactly how to excitate these dopamine receptors for you, then you need to go to work to be able to create an architecture behind fighting exactly what these companies are doing to be able to create balance in your mind. And it doesn't just stop with the body, you know, sorry, with the mind, you know, hence the Body Meets Mind podcast. You know, we talk a lot about the mind. We also talk a lot about the body, because resilience in the body will have a tremendous effect, not just on your obesity rates and your biological health rates, but your mental health rates as well.
Absolutely, man. I think, you know, the great segue into the bottom-up approach here is that, you know, something Dr. Huberman talks about is that you can't heal the mind with the mind. You know, I love that, because so often we go and seek therapy because we have a mind problem. And sometimes that's important, because talk therapy can work to unjumble, you know, thoughts that sometimes have been there for years from past traumas and so forth. But inevitably, who we are is a consequence of what we do across time, and do is about action. Do is in the body, you know, and, you know, to bring it back to resilience, you know, practicing doing something difficult habitually is one of the best things you can do to build resilience and build a more fulfilled sense of self.
Spot on. And I get what, you know, Andrew is talking about when he talks about you can't, you know, fight the mind with the mind. When you're in a dark place, or if you're really, really feeling this melancholy, the last thing you feel like you want to do is get into that mind space.
Yes.
Because it's a very, very complex place, and it's not particularly inviting place to be. So something more tangible for you to be able to access might be accessing resilience through your body. And I think it's a great place, a little bit of a leeway for us to get a little bit more practical about things that we can do with the body and also with the mind to be able to develop resilience.
Yes. Yeah. So this is a good point. So we'll bring it back to dopamine just for a second, so we understand what's going on. So when you have an increase in dopamine, because of homeostasis, you're going to get a proportional drop in dopamine levels relative to that increase. So let's just say the baseline zero, and you have an ice cream and you go up by two. Okay. And then when the ice cream's done, you're going to go down by negative two. So you're going to feel worse. But what you want to do is so the awareness tip for everyone listening to this is constantly feel into where you are on that scale. Okay. If you've had a giant pizza, okay, when you perceive that drop and you start to feel that drop and the negative thoughts and feelings come in, you know, see that as not another reason to do something else that doesn't give you that kind of earned reward. Feel into that space. You know, a psychologist friend of mine says, learn to feel shit better. I love that, because you're just feeling into that, you know. And Ram Dass talks about, you know, going down the stream and experiencing the 10,000 horrible visions and the 10,000 beautiful visions. You know, it's a more esoteric way of kind of talking about what we are talking about, you know. But 100%. If you can just flip your mind and go, I'm down in this dark place and I'm going to feel it because it's what my brain and body is doing, voluntarily allowing yourself to be there might be 10 push-ups. You know, or even just going out for a walk or something that doesn't give you that dopamine hit straight away without earned effort.
Yes. Love it. Let's get practical about, you know, you just mentioned a couple of like mental examples of how you can go about doing it. You know, simply viewing the world in a different through a different lens when you walk
Yes.
down the street, being able to access various different components of your brain. What's something that you might be able to indulge in or participate in that accesses other aspects of your mind?
So I'm big on, I really like that notion of feeling all the feelings. I think it's such an important tool that you can use in this day and age, you know, and it's just being with what is, you know. That's mindfulness in a nutshell. It really is. It's creating space between stimulus and response, you know, and just like viewing yourself as a very interesting painting with a thousand different perspectives, you know, and going, oh, I wonder why that's there, you know, and not trying to change it or fix it or anything, just going, that's there. Okay, cool. You start to notice patterns after that. But to me, to be completely honest with you, if we want to get practical, which I think is something that you can speak to here, I think when we do start to feel flat, that initial change in mindset then leads to things you can do with your body, is the be all and end all, you know, which I'd love for you to speak on, dude, because I really agree with Huberman. You know, when you're really flat, healing the mind with the mind is a tough thing
It is
because
hard.
you're in there.
And to what you were talking about, I always like to look at one's personal situation
Course.
with curiosity rather than overwhelming emotion,
Yep.
where you can't kind of access that sense of space and perspective.
Yes. Yeah. So we'll put this into like a physical context. When you're working with someone, mate, and they're talking to you about low motivation, you know, dark thoughts. I mean, there's a lot of therapy overlap in every industry, you know. If you work with people, then you're a therapist to some degree. What are you kind of prescribing them typically? What are you, first of all, what are the common themes? And then what are you prescribing?
So, for me personally, I if we're talking about res like let's just really look at re resilience, since it is the theme of today's discussion. I think some really, really simple tools that you can do, and I mentioned this, is putting yourself in a less comfortable situation. Something that is talked about a lot of recent times is extreme temperature, kind of exposure. Start by turning off the hot water in your shower for 10 seconds at the end of that shower, and then move that dial up to 30 seconds, maybe 60 seconds. This might not seem like something that is going to have an impact on your brain and your emotions, but if you do that for a consistent period of time, it proves to your body that it can actually get through. So get n n not only the, I'm not even talking about the neurochemistry the main hit that you actually do receive through hard work. I'm talking about the proof to yourself that you can actually get through something that is actually uncomfortable, and you don't give in at the first sight of some kind of discomfort. So let's just use that as an example. I'm happy we were actually meant to talk about an hour ago, and I'm happy we delayed it for by an hour because my face was a beetroot. I came from a 40-minute sauna exposure, which
Oh, you
was
did? Oh, I didn't even know that.
which was amazing. And as I was driving home, I was looking in the mirror going, this is going to be an interesting podcast.
Yeah, a couple
But
of fainting episodes and
But it was great, and I'm starting to use extreme temperature exposure as a form of resilience. I love it. I love getting. I look at that first 20 minutes in the sauna as a precursor to the next 15, 20 minutes, because that's the stuff that really,
Love
really
that.
challenges your mind, challenges your body, exposes your heart to stresses that create that hormetic or hormesis effect in your body. So we talked about this in past episodes, but once you challenge your body through these this adversity, not only are you changing the neurochemistry in your mind, not only are you proving to yourself that you can come out the other end of something that is challenging, but you're actually making, you're adding years to your life as well. You're telling your body that if you can stress it out to a certain degree and your body can respond as a result of this, your body will adapt. And if you can do this consistently enough, and if you can do this through an intermittent prescription, then your longevity genes, everything as a result of this, your internal environment is going to respond in a positive way.
Man, I love that. And it's so uplifting, to hear that, because you're absolutely right. Exposing yourself consistently with gradual greater intensity, changes the baseline of what's tolerable in terms of, pain and pleasure. The other interesting thing from the book is that pain and pleasure are located in the same part of the brain. So the part of the brain responsible for inducing pleasurable states also does the same thing with painful states. And what that means is that we can become tolerant of increasingly easier societies, which brings us back to our initial point, or harder and harder societies. And I think, even beyond, sorry, even within our own backyards, don't forget about society. Forget about who you want to be as an individual and the kind of vision you have for your life. For me, I'll just give a personal example very quickly. Now I kind of wake up every morning quite early, and I'll typically read for at least an hour before I get into my writing. Reading does not come naturally at all. My thirst for knowledge does. It's very much an inherent thing. But reading is was always difficult for me. I just thought it was really cool to be able to say, oh, I've read this and I've read this and I really had read it, but I started off by reading easy books, and I couldn't concentrate for a very long time. For me, prolonged concentration was an act of discomfort. It wasn't necessarily a physiological stressor like cold showers or sauna, but just being bored and then gradually expanding my ability to just do one thing was tough. But you habitualize and you can find a new baseline.
I love that, and that's another incredible example of getting out the other end of adversity. That's a significant stress. It's a perceived stress. It's an understanding of the way you saw your relationship to reading, and I guarantee you now the way you've described this, how you've come out the other end, you look at your relationship with reading in a very different light. And as a result of that, the stimulus needs to change as well. And this is something that's also quite interesting. It's like, let's use the reading as an example. Maybe you started a few years ago by reading Where's Spot?
That's so weird that you just said that, man. I was about to say Spot's Magical Christmas.
And it's a great book.
It's a
Like,
great book. Doo doo doo. That's my childhood.
it's a fantastic book, but you've probably evolved to a certain
I wish.
but this is what happens if I can lead that to having a 10-second cold shower. You might find yourself in an ice bath for 3 minutes, and there's naturally going to be a point where you don't really want to create any more adversity because it starts to become detrimental. And this is where people start, can get into that kind of realm where they become adrenaline junkies, and they get those massive dopamine hits from all of this kind of activity that really puts your life at risk. And people do that. But what is cool is science actually can measure where that dopamine hit gets at its height, and like let's use cold exposure for example, between 1 and 3 minutes, it
Right.
seems to be the sweet spot for an ice bath. If
Yep.
you do any more, you're really you're kind of arresting your benefits biologically for what you'd be able to achieve through dopamine, etc. So whilst you may be able to train yourself to do it, you could step into a realm where you're putting yourself in danger.
Absolutely.
And you're not really getting any more reward biologically from it.
Mate, absolutely. You know that you spoke about hormesis before, and I think that the science is pretty conclusive on that in showing that a little bit of resistance leads to a good amount of adaptation, but too much resistance is absolutely dangerous and detrimental.
And it's like, let's use like an example of training at the gym,
Right.
okay?
Perfect.
If you are regularly going to train your body, and let's say you're cycling through, you're periodizing a program, and at some stage you get to, I don't know, like you're deadlifting 60, 70, 75% of your 1 RM. Maybe you get to 80% of your 1 RM, and you're doing that over a period of time. Well, I'll tell you right now, if you're lifting 100% of your 1 RM every single time you get towards that bar, you're going to hurt yourself
Yes.
because your body will not allow it to recover in a positive and a constructive manner. And it
Yep.
doesn't give your body time to adapt to the environment that you've actually exposed it to. So it's really, really important for you to be aware and cognizant of how to expose yourself to these types of things. And a certain element of that can be intuitive, but just know that there's definitely a switch that you can turn on that is going to be too great.
Mate, absolutely. I think that's a good place to come full circle. And I think when it comes to being resilient, bottom up, top down, it's so important to, excuse me, compare yourself with yourself, other people, I mean, think about it like Mount Everest. It's my favorite analogy for all this kind of stuff. There are people out there who are, they're at camp four. And they're making their way to the top, you might not even be ready to get to base camp yet. It's really, really important that you see it like that. But stepping forward and becoming more resilient relative to your experience, that's the way to do things, So any sort of tools and examples, go for it. If you want to use reading as an example and you really struggle reading, maybe sitting down every day, and reading a paragraph and just spending time with that paragraph and seeing if you can do it before your mind starts to wander. That might be where you're at. We're all at different levels.
100%. That's beautiful. And you can apply a very, very clear prescription of progressive overload when you're
Yes.
using something like reading. If you're starting with one paragraph, then you can add a sentence every day, on top of that. If you start by putting your shoes on and going for a walk, getting up off that couch that allows you
Yeah,
to get up
exactly.
on your own, and you eventually get around the block. Who knows? Maybe you get to a walk run scenario where you're walking for 5 minutes and you run for 1 minute. There are so many different scenarios that you can apply these laws of progressive overload, but know that resilience is a progressive step and you don't want to go too hard too early for a number of reasons. The first one is you could hurt yourself. The second one is you're probably going to get intimidated when you fail if you go
Yes,
too hard and too quick. So
love
you
that.
need to be able to apply that those laws of progressive overload. So that is the podcast for today. That was a wonderful chat, and thanks, Tom, for your insights into the neurochemistry behind dopamine hits and how and what goes on inside of our brains when this happens.
Mate, right back at you. It's always a pleasure. I mean, I love that we catch up so frequently because I think every time we catch up, whilst we agree on the kind of time of the podcast episodes, there's always so much that we could talk about. So we will continue to do that.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Thanks,
Beautiful.
guys. Thanks, Tom.
See you, mate.